still in that same O shape it was in when the lights went down.
"Willow Dean," she says. "Correct me if I'm wrong, but that was a man, a very lovely man."
I glance around. Men holding hands, girls with their arms around each other.
"This is better than reality TV," says Amanda.
The crowd applauds as Candy Dish curtsies.
"Let's hear it for the iconic Britney Swears!"
Another woman enters from offstage. And I see it now. The rough edge of her square jaw, her broad shoulders, the stubble beneath her makeup despite her close shave. This is a drag show. I sit up straighter in my chair. My stomach flurries with excitement. For the first time since that night, when I sat in the back of Beau's truck watching the meteor shower, I feel like my life is happening.
"I'm almost impressed," says Hannah.
We watch as drag queens of every shape and size and color give it their all and leave everything they've got on that stage in this dingy little bar out in the middle of West Texas. They wear sparkling, elaborate costumes with incredible high heels and insane wigs. Each of them is their own brand of beauty. There's even a duo with a woman cross-dressing as Kenny Rogers for a rendition of Islands in the Stream. My favorite, though, is a short Asian queen named Li Wei. She wears a baby blue mini dress with sequins so long that every time she moves, she's a blur of motion. When the spotlight zeroes in on her and the song begins, it only takes one note before the whole bar loses it. Jolene. It's cliche, I know. But if I had to listen to one song for the rest of my life, it would be Jolene. Everyone loves it. But I like to think it takes a special kind of heartbreak to really call the song your own. I mean, Dolly Parton. The Dolly Parton is singing to some mysterious Jolene who she thinks is more beautiful and more worthy than her, begging her not to take her man. It's catchy and everyone knows the words. But to me, it's this reminder that no matter who you are, there will always be someone prettier or smarter or thinner. Perfection is nothing more than a phantom shadow we're all chasing. If I could sing worth a lick, this would be the song I'd sing for the pageant. By the end of the song, I'm wiping away tears I didn't even realize I was shedding. The four of us leave at the end of the night with this look of wonder plastered to our faces, like we've spent the last few hours sitting too close to the TV. As we're walking to the van, someone calls to us from the back door.
"Hey, kiddies!"
I turn. It's the bouncer from earlier. "Y'all go on," I tell Millie, Hannah, and Amanda. "I'll be there in a sec." The burly man sits on his stool, holding the back door open with his back.
"Name's Dale,"
he says.
"You enjoy yourself tonight?"
I nod. I think it's safe to say that this has been a formative experience in my life.
"Seems like a fair thing to say about most drag shows."
I nod back to the van. My friends had fun, too.
"Lee!"
he calls behind him as he stubs out a cigarette beneath his boot.
"Honey!"
Li Wei, the queen who sang Jolene, saunters out the back door. She's even shorter and somehow rounder without her high heels. She looks from me to the bouncer and smiles, even though she obviously has no idea who I am.
"You remember Lucy?"
Dale asks.
"Used to come around here with Sue's driver."
Elle's mom. Oh, Jesus. I wish Elle had been here tonight. It's the only thing that could have made the whole experience even more perfect. Lee holds her hand to her chest.
"Oh, sweet Lucy, of course I do."
Her voice is deeper than I expect.
"This is her niece,"
says Dale. I nod. "Willow Dean." Without a moment of hesitation, Lee reaches for my hand.
"I am so sorry," she tells me. "Lucy was a real gem. She had a kind, open heart. We were so sad to see her go."
Thanks, I say. And I don't really know why, but I add, I've been real lost without her. Like, she was this compass I didn't even know I had. She nods, and Dale presses his lips together in a thin line.
You email the club's address if you ever need anything, he says.
Lee steps forward and plants a kiss on my forehead.
There's nothing good about losing someone, she says. But maybe Lucy wasn't supposed to be your compass forever. Maybe she was there for you just long enough so you could learn how to be your own compass and find your own way.
She winks at me.
The universe is a strange thing.
I leave Dale and Lee there at the stage door and hop into the back seat of the van.
What do they want?
Amanda asks. Just told me not to come back until we're 18.
You've got lipstick on your forehead, says Hannah.
I know. I want to leave it there forever as a blessing. The last permission I need to be my own role model. Chapter 39. 1 week turns into two. And I realize that Mitch and I have begun to spend lunches and almost every moment not dedicated to work or the pageant together. I almost even tell him about the drag show at the Hideaway. But it's like trying to explain your favorite part of a movie to someone who's never seen it. You'll never do it justice. We both settle into an easy type of routine where I come over and watch him play video games, even taking the controls myself a few times. I stay for dinner one night. But it feels too much like trespassing. From what I gather, Mitch and his mom eat dinner together every night while his dad takes his meal on a TV tray in front of his recliner. I watch him walk in from work, grab a beer, and wait in the living room for his food to be brought to him. The three of us eat at the dinner table in total silence as our silverware scratches against plates. I want to ask Mitch about it, but it feels like a secret I'm not meant to know. A few days later, we sit at lunch, talking about what we want to do after graduation when he brings it up all on his own.
I don't know if I can leave my mom, he says. I mean, he doesn't, like, hit her or anything. But they don't talk. Not at all. And I kind of hope that maybe it's me who's the problem, so that if I do leave, it'll get better.
Why don't they get divorced? A single-parent home is all I've ever known. And Lucy more than made up for some deadbeat dad. My real dad was some guy passing through town. He stuck around for a while, but not long enough to be more than some guy. He's in Ohio or Idaho, wherever the potatoes come from. He smiles in a broken kind of way.
My mom doesn't believe in divorce. She gets really upset every time I mention it.
Just as I'm about to respond, Tim walks right past us. Hang on a sec, I say as I'm already leaving to follow him. Tim! I look around for any sign of Ellen as I follow him up to the lunch line. I cut past three freshmen to squeeze in behind Tim. Tim, come on! Talk to me! He reaches for a tray, and so do I. We're friends too, you know, I remind him. He takes one of the bowls of mac and cheese from beneath the heat lamps.
I know that, Will.
I check over my shoulder once more for Elle, even though I didn't see her in second period.
She's sick today, he says.
The lunch lady tries to offer me a plate of chicken fried steak, but I wave her off.
You've got to get her to talk to me.
He shakes his head.
When has anyone ever had any luck making Ellen do anything?
He has a point.
Come on, Tim. Something. I can meet you guys one day in the parking lot or... Maybe you can tell her you want to meet her in the gym and I'll show up instead.
I'm not tricking her into talking to you.
I don't want to get in the middle of this.
Tim pays for his food as the lunch lady eyes my empty tray. I take a bowl of green jello and hand her a few dollars without waiting for my change.
You can't tell me she's not miserable without me.
Listen, I'll try, but I just don't see how I can make something happen.
I nod my head like a madwoman and pretend he didn't say that second half.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
I really hate that Callie girl,
he says. Relief floods my chest.
No stronger bond than a common enemy.
I hurry back over to the table where I left Mitch.
I'm so sorry, I tell him.
He's unfazed.
Can't beat a jello craving.
I shove a spoonful in my mouth. I could have at least gone for the Red Bull.
Hey,
Mitch says.
Not to put you on the spot, but my mom's been talking about making you a homecoming mom, and I wanted to make sure that wouldn't be awkward or anything.
I smile. No, that wouldn't be awkward or anything. The door chime at the Chili Bowl so rarely rings, which means I always find myself startled when it does. Ron, my former boss, walks in. Because of the log cabin interior and maroon accents, he looks like a candy cane in the middle of a lumberyard with his red and white striped shirt and white pants.
Ron,
I whisper, circling around the counter.
What are you doing here?
Maybe I want chili,
he says a little too loudly. I cross my arms over my chest and give him the best cut-the-shit stare I can muster.
All right.
His voice drops a few degrees.
Listen, we're desperate and super short-handed. I've got Lydia working 60-hour weeks covering your old shift because everyone we hire leaves when they find something better. She's threatening to quit on me, and I can't afford to see her go.
My head shaking before he can even finish.
Hear me out.
He puts one hand up.
You left in an awful hurry. I may be old, but I'm not dumb. I don't know what happened, but whatever it was, I promise the boys will be on their best behavior. I grilled each of them, Marcus and Beau, after you left, and I got nothing.
He shakes his head, and I see the lines of exhaustion crowded around his mouth and eyes.
Give us a second chance. I'm begging you, Will.
I open my mouth to say no, but nothing comes out. Ron's always been so kind to me, and I think I owe it to him to at least pretend that I'll think about it. I'll let you know by the end of the week. I'm going to have to think on it. He holds his hands up.
Fair enough, fair enough.
He pulls his wallet from his back pocket.
I'll take a cup of chili.
I only see a few more customers for the rest of the night, which gives me far too much time to think. At first, I'm logical. You don't make nearly as much money as you used to at Harpy's, and your car's stuck in the shop. At least Harpy's is busy enough to make the time go by faster. Then I remember how lonely these last few weeks have felt. Millie, Hannah, Amanda, and Mitch, too, are okay. Great, even. But they're no Ellen. The thought of going back to Harpy's feels like comfort food. And not just because of Beau. I miss Marcus and Ron, too. Beau was the reason I quit, the reason why I couldn't bear to work there anymore. But now that anger I've trained myself to feel seems false, like a pretense of what I thought it should be. And it's pretty obvious he's over me, too. I don't know for sure, but I've heard whispers about him and Becca. And if I don't think about what it felt like to kiss him, then I can tell myself that they're cute together, that they match. And maybe the burning that could only be jealousy will go away. Before leaving work, I scrub everything down and refill the already stuffed condiment bar. I'm still thinking, I tell myself. I haven't made up my mind. I say goodnight to Alejandro and get in my mom's car. Rather than turning left out of the Chili Bowl, my foot presses against the gas pedal, almost flying across the street and into the parking lot of Harpy's. I've crossed the line in the sand. The dining room doors are locked, but I bang on them anyway. Marcus turns the lock and lets me in.
Whoa! Hey, what's going on, Will? You smell like onions.
Beau watches me from behind the counter with wide eyes and a twitching jaw. I can't look away. Ron in his office? I ask Marcus. If Marcus would look up from the lock instead of fiddling with his huge ring of keys, he'd see everything that happened between Beau and me, because in this moment it is so obvious, so open, so public. It's all right there, splayed out like an open-heart surgery.
Yeah, I think so.
He locks the door behind me, finally.
But you still haven't said what you're doing here.
I don't answer him. The butterflies in my stomach carry me through the break room into Ron's office. I knock on the open door. Lydia is sitting in front of his desk on a crate. She turns at the sound of me.
Oh, thank Christ! The prodigal cashier has returned!
She stands and takes her pack of cigarettes from his desk.
I'll leave you to it.
And once her back is turned to him, She gives me the tiniest smile as she closes the door. Without bothering to sit, I turn to Ron.
I want a raise, and I'm going to need a couple days off for this thing I have.
Without hesitating, Ron says,
I can do a 75-cent raise, and I'll work with you on your schedule. We'll figure it out.
Okay. I didn't expect that to be so simple.
Well, then it's a deal. You're back?
I nod. I'm back.
That chili was really bad. I tried to eat it, but Lydia kept gagging every time she walked by my office. I think she was kidding, but still.
It's pretty horrible, he chuckles.
I'm glad to have you back.
He stands and walks me through the kitchen to the front. We pass Bo and his eyes follow us all the way to the door.
Are you okay to start on Monday?
I'll be there. He holds his hand out for me to shake, and I do. I walk to my car as Bo's gaze follows me. The feeling of it starts as a ball of heat in my chest and spreads like a sunrise. Chapter 40. I give Alejandro my notice, and he kind of looked at me like, what took you so long? He promised me that I'd always have a job at the Chili Bowl and asked me to give Ellen his number. I slipped the folded scrap of paper in my pocket and swore to forget about it. I was all nerves when I told Mitch I was going back to Harpy's, but he shrugged it off and kept playing his video game. It occurred to me then that he had no reason to be upset. For the first time, not telling him about my history with Bo felt like a lie. My first night back at Harpy's is quiet. Marcus berates me with endless questions about the chili bowl, like, who makes the chili, or is it true you guys don't wash the pots? Bo keeps to himself in the kitchen. But we play a game of catch me if you can with our eyes over the heat lamp counters. When Bo's on his break, Marcus leans over and says,
he almost got fired a couple weeks after you left.
What? The way Ron made it seem, he couldn't afford to fire anyone, so I can't imagine what Bo could have done that was bad enough to get fired.
Ron had Bo up on the front counter while he worked the kitchen, which was a bad idea to begin with. And these guys from his old school came in, and Bo refused to serve them. Just flat out told them they weren't welcome. The dudes made a big deal about it. Even their parents made a big deal about it. And basically, the only way Bo could keep his job was if Ron only kept him in the kitchen.
Whoa.
He's one crazy dude. I feel like he's either going to murder everyone or be like a movie star. There's no in between for that guy.
I like that about Bo. You were either for him or against him. Marcus goes off on a tangent about different schools that his girlfriend Tiffany is looking at, and how he's going to a community college near whatever school she chooses. He doesn't really pause to ask me a question or get my take on any of it, but he seems to take comfort in talking without someone lecturing him on why he shouldn't be planning his life around a girl. I don't know. Maybe Tiffany and Marcus will go off to school and graduate and get married and live happily ever after. But I don't want to be the asshole he worked with at a fast food restaurant who planted a seed of doubt in his head. After cleanup, I take my bag out of my locker and find a red sucker there. I try not to smile as I slide it into my purse. Bo says nothing. He doesn't even make eye contact with me. But as we're all walking out the door, I unwrap the sucker and pop it in my mouth. It's a cherry-flavored olive branch. When I get home from work, I find my mom on her knees with Lacey Sanders standing on a step stool in a formal gown and Becca Cotter on my couch, tapping away on her cell phone.
Hi, Dumplin',
says Mom through the straight pins between her teeth.
Lacey, how's this hemline, dear? You can't go any higher on those heels, you hear?
Lacey smacks her gum and blows a bubble.
Roger that.
Lots of things happen around pageant season, but Mom altering dresses in the middle of our living room is not one of them. There's also the fact that with Becca sitting here in my house, my brain is going into high alert mode like one of Mitch's video games. Red letters flash above Becca's head. Target! Target! I feel weird going upstairs with all of them down here. So I sit on the couch and lightly click my tongue until Riot comes out of hiding. Becca glances up from her phone and turns to me.
Oh, hey, you work at Harpy's. You must know Bo.
She doesn't even know to be threatened by me, because why would she? Lacey spins around and I see the terror on my mother's face.
Lacey, honey, you have got to stay still.
Sorry, Misty.
She blows another bubble. I glance down at my uniform. Well, I did over the summer and I just started back there again today. Why? My tone is sharp, but Becca doesn't seem to notice.
He's a strange one, says Lacey.
He's my escort, says Becca. For the pageant. Well, I haven't asked him, but he's going to be, I think.
Hey,
says Lacey.
He might be quiet.
Shit, she mouths.
But at least he'll look good in a tux. Maybe he'll let you twirl his baton.
I could barf on her shoes.
Girls,
my mother shrieks. Becca grins.
We went to Sadie Hawkins together, she says by way of explanation.
Against his protests, I tuck Riot beneath my arm and stand to go upstairs.
Nice dress, Lacey.
I sit on my bed, still dressed in my uniform, and compose text to Ellen that I'll never send. I check for messages from Tim I might have accidentally missed. Anytime I see him at school, I look for some kind of meaningful eye contact, but the best he's given me is a curt headshake. After a while, my mom knocks on the door and enters without waiting for my permission.
I'm doing some alterations this year for extra cash.
She pulls the elastic out of her hair and combs her fingers through.
You could have told me.
Becca caught her. On my couch. I'm not even safe in my own house. But then I notice the deep circles beneath my mom's eyes.
I'm sorry, I say.
She nods.
You missed Ellen. She was here with her mom.
She was here?
My eyes are immediately thick with tears waiting to spill.
Only getting her hem fixed. You know that girl. Can buy a darn formal straight off the rack and it fits like a dream.
Yeah. I don't even know what she's wearing for the pageant. Or what her talent will be. Or if she started on her prop for the opening number.
What's going on with the two of you anyway?
Me and Elle? I shrug. Just having a difference of opinion, I guess.
Y'all will figure things out. Me and Luce always did.
She comes in a little further and sits at the foot of my bed. I try to picture the last time I saw her perched there, but nothing comes to mind. And it's like one of those memories you tell yourself is real, but it's not. You just wanted it to be.
Have you thought any about your wardrobe for the pageant?
No. Not really. I bite down on the skin around my thumbnail. Mom, do you miss her?
Miss who?
It kills me that she doesn't instinctively know. Lucy.
Luce,
she says, and it comes out like a breath.
Yeah, of course. All the time.
We're both quiet for a moment.
The year I won Miss Teen, she stayed up all night sewing sequins on my dress. I bought the thing at a consignment shop. I told her no one would notice a few missing sequins, but she wouldn't have any of it.
The difference between winning and losing is all in the details, she said.
So much of my memory is filled with their arguments that I sometimes forget that, more than anything else, they loved each other. She stands up.
The dresses from Cindy's are pretty pricey, and she'd have to order something for you. But maybe we can put something together ourselves.
I want to appreciate this, that she can take off her former Miss Teen blue bonnet hat and be my mom. But it doesn't feel like enough. Sometimes, I say, I think I can't miss Lucy any more than I already do. But then something like dress shopping comes up, and I remember all the things she won't be here to see. For the first time in a very long time, my mom says nothing. I never realized how much was lacking from my relationship with her until Lucy wasn't here to fill in the gaps. It's the two of us now, fumbling around in the dark.
Chapter 41.
It's homecoming, which means school is a total joke. The day's schedule is full of pep rallies, contests, and alumni tours. When I sit down for second period next to Mitch, there's a huge blue, yellow, and white mom spread out across my desk. Long, glittery ribbons hang from a cluster of fake chrysanthemums, and hot glued to that are two miniature stuffed teddy bears, one in a football uniform and the other in a pink dress and a tiara. Moms are like good food. The best kind is homemade. Oh, I suck in a breath.
You don't like it?
Asks Mitch. He wears a small version of my mom around his arm. His hair is combed and his jersey is tucked into his jeans.
My mom can go overboard and, well, I can't really.
I sink down into my chair. No, it's not that, I tell him. I love it. No one's ever given me a mom before. Thank you. Really.
But,
I sigh. I have to work tonight. He smiles, but the rest of his face is heavy with disappointment.
I guess you can't get out of that, huh?
I wish I could. I really do. But I just started back, and I'm going to have to take time off for the pageant, too. He squeezes my hand.
It's cool. At least tomorrow's Halloween.
For a moment, I'm distracted as Ellen and Callie file into the classroom, laughing back and forth about the costumes they have planned for tomorrow night. I hated dressing up with her. She'd always try to put together some couple's costume that suited both of us, but no matter how hard she tried, it never quite worked. She doesn't even look in my direction. There are lots of things I can't remember, like the periodic table, my mother's birthday, or my locker combination at work. But if there's one thing I can't forget, it's those words we spat at each other.
Maybe we're outgrown each other, holding each other back. I miss that on lots of things because of you.
I hate it. I hate that she thinks she's better off without me. Like I'm this sad, fat girl stepping on her heels. I know I should apologize, but maybe she should too. I wear the mom all day long. It's so big I have to wear it around my neck. Hannah and Amanda make fun of me. Millie thinks it's adorable. But by the end of the day, my neck is sore and my shoulders are hunched from the weight of it. For Halloween, Ron asks us to wear costumes because the elementary school PTA is hosting a trunk-or-treat party in our parking lot. Like I told Mitch on our most awkward date ever, Halloween isn't my thing. Outside of school parties, my mom never really took me anywhere for Halloween. Well, except to church harvest parties, which were just covers for Halloween parties. Besides, we were only able to dress up as biblical characters. If you're a guy, that's not a big deal. But if you're a girl, all you've got is Eve. Leaf bikini anyone? Esther, the Virgin Mary, or a prostitute. Plus, all that's in my costume arsenal is the Betty half of Betty and Wilma from the Flintstones costumes that Elle and I wore a few years ago. Ron's dressed in all black like Zorro with a plastic sword tied to his hip.
Well, I figured none of y'all would come dressed.
He drops a cardboard box down on the counter.
I borrowed some hats and whatnot from the church drama department.
Marcus picks a devil headband from the top and holds it up for inspection.
What is this? Some leftover from last year's Hell House?
Ron takes the devil horns from him and drops them back in the box.
Let's maybe stick to the less controversial stuff. And the candy is for the kids only, no teenagers.
He walks outside to the popcorn machine on the sidewalk where he'll be handing out complimentary bags of popcorn. Bo takes the blue and white striped conductor hat and then reaches over my shoulder to grab a lollipop from the bowl of candy. Despite Ron's request, Marcus goes for the devil horns, and I reach for the sequined flapper headband with a big white feather. Besides the rare kids' meals, it's pretty quiet. I get bored enough to clean out the employee fridge. When I'm done, I find Callie and her boyfriend Bryce standing in front of the counter. Bryce is wearing jeans and a t-shirt cut to look like a Peter Pan tunic, while Callie is supposed to be some kind of warped version of Wendy Darling in a sexy blue nightie.
What are you doing here?
Each word comes out like acid.
Whoa, says Callie. Someone's attitude is turned up to 10.
The bell above the door chimes, and the situation goes from bad to worse. Ellen is dressed like Tinkerbell. And really, besides being one of the tallest girls I know, she makes the perfect Tink. Tim is dressed as Hook. Unlike Bryce, he's actually committed to his costume.
I hate it. I hate their dumb, coordinated costumes. And I hate the way Elle looks like I'm violating her by breathing the same air.
Tim's eyes go wide for a second while Elle studies the floor. I try not to gasp. He did this. He made this happen. I would have preferred he not bring Callie and Bryce, but this is my chance. I've got to take it. Ellen looks up.
I didn't think you worked here anymore.
That's all she has to say. After all these weeks of silence, that's all she's got.
I came back.
Despite our audience, this moment feels starkly personal.
Hi, Tim.
He nods in my direction and does nothing more to acknowledge me. I want to call him a traitor, but it's obvious whose side he's on.
Let's go,
says Elle.
That's it? I haven't talked to you in weeks, and that's it?
I can sense Marcus and Beau watching now, too. Callie turns to Ellen.
You don't owe her anything.
Elle's eyes don't move.
I'm doing pretty good on my own, so, yeah. I guess that's it.
The four of them leave, and as they do, Tim shrugs in my direction. Marcus and Beau know better than to ask me what's going on. Marcus spends his break in the parking lot as he travels from trunk to trunk with a paper harpy's bag.
Like the feather,
says Beau from the kitchen as he points to my hair. I forgot I was wearing this thing. All I've been able to think about is Ellen. I can't believe that happened. This part of me kept holding on to the hope that we would break the silence somehow, and it would be fine. But it's not. I touch my hand to the feather, letting the edges tickle my fingertips. Yeah, thanks.
I'm glad you're back.
I nod. I'm glad I am, too. This little grease hut feels like a slice of normal, and so does he. I wish that wasn't true, but it is. He pulls the conductor hat off and repositions it on his head.
And I'm sorry you felt the need to leave.
It's okay. I stack and restack the same pile of to-go bags before asking, Are you missing Holy Cross? He smirks.
I actually miss my uniform.
What? Why?
I don't know. It's kind of nice to not have to think about clothes in the morning.
He brushes his thumb along his lower lip.
I guess you could say I'm not a morning person.
Hearing him talk this much after 2 months of silence is like a downpour after a drought.
And then my brother hates it.
He chews the skin around his thumb for a second before adding,
But it's my fault we had to leave, HC.
I'm about to ask him why when Marcus walks back in.
Y'all, those moms are not fooling with that candy.
Heat spreads to my cheeks, like we've been caught making out. At the end of the night, we all walk out together, the two of them laughing about Ron's Zorro costume. Bo still wears the conductor hat, and I can't even look at him without smiling like a total idiot. Outside, Mitch is leaning up against my car. It's horrible of me, but I resent him being here. I'm like one of those people who doesn't like for their food to touch. I need for Mitch to stay on his side of the plate.
Hey,
I say to Marcus and Beau.
I'll see y'all later.
I turn to Mitch. It might be physically impossible, but I feel Beau's eyes on my back like a weight.
Hi. Nice costume.
Mitch is dressed like Indiana Jones in khaki pants and a bomber jacket with a wide-brim hat.
It's Saturday night,
he says.
It's Halloween.
I laugh.
Which basically means I want to go home.
He shakes his head.
Nope. Not happening. I'm going to show you why Halloween is awesome. Let's go. Get in.
I don't have a costume.
He shrugs.
You're a fast food employee. Or a candy striper.
My feelings for him swing from hot to cold and back. I don't want him here. I want him here. He's crowding me. He's not close enough. I feel a smile flicker on my lips.
Okay. Prove me wrong.
Chapter 42. In the car, I text my mom to let her know I'll be home a little late. But there's another message waiting for me. Beau.
Glad you're back.
I bite in on my lips, making them disappear, and drop my phone into the cup holder. Mitch drives us to Stonebridge, the richest neighborhood in Clover City. I guess maybe it's not rich by normal standards, but it was built in the last 10 years, and it's gated. The gates are always open, but whatever. After parking on a random street, he tosses me a pillowcase.
Wait, we can't go trick-or-treating this late.
It's not that late.
It's past midnight.
Well, we are.
Mitch doubles back.
Forgot something.
He runs back to his car and comes back with a brown whip twisted around his fist.
Are you shitting me with that thing?
What? It makes the costume more authentic.
We walk down the center of the street for a while, looking for a house with the light still on. The pavement is smooth and pale, nothing like the patch-riddled street I grew up on. Every house is huge and hulking, but crammed together with only slivers of plush green grass between them. When this place was first being built, my mom and Lucy used to drive through here every few weeks with me in the back seat. We watched as all the houses were built and each street added. I remember being in awe of the new street signs, like some virgin territory had been discovered and we were some of the first to visit it. I had no understanding of how small Clover City was, but to me, this was where all the glamorous people lived. Movie stars, musicians, models. And back then, my mom was still glamorous to me. I thought the three of us would get our fancy house someday. The first house we stop at is red brick, with a huge bay window and a glowing chandelier visible from the street. Mitch rings the doorbell, and I stand half behind him. It's late, and whoever answers isn't going to be thrilled to have two teenage kids at their doorstep. No answer. Mitch rings again. I start walking back down the sidewalk.
No one's answering. Let's go.
Wait, says Mitch.
The door creaks open to reveal a woman in a bathrobe with water dripping down her neck and her hair wrapped in a towel. She's too old to be my mom, but not old enough to be my grandma.
Can I help you?
Mitch holds his pillowcase out without hesitation.
Trick or treat!
The woman looks like she's woken up in a different time zone.
Oh!
She holds her wrist up to check the time, I guess, but there's no watch there.
Right!
She closes the door almost all the way and returns moments later with a bowl of candy. Without hesitation, she dumps half the bowl into Mitch's bag. He nudges me forward, and despite how foolish I feel, I open my pillowcase. She pours out the remainder. I guess this lady figures if two high school kids have the balls to go trick-or-treating this late at night in the nicest neighborhood in town, we deserve some candy. Bathrobe lady pats her stomach.
I shouldn't keep all this in the house anyway.
Mitch tips his hat.
Gracias, señorita.
As we're walking down the pathway, he bumps into my shoulder.
See?
He says.
That was fun.
Most of the houses we visit have reactions like bathrobe lady. Don't answer or turn their lights off when they see us outside. At one house, an old man in boxer shorts answers. His face is perpetually frowning with wrinkles so thick he could be melting.
Get out of here, you damn hooligans,
he yells.
Trick or treat,
says Mitch over the sound of a small dog yelping behind the man.
Oh, I'll trick you.
The man opens the door fully to reveal a shotgun at his side.
I'ma whip y'all's asses.
Mitch grabs my hand.
Run, run, run!
We haul it down the driveway and around the corner as the old man's heckling laugh echoes behind us. When we're a safe distance away, I stop with my hands braced on my knees. We're both heaving.
That crazy bastard!
I take a fresh gulp of air.
Could have killed us, I say.
Nah,
he says.
He wanted to scare us.
I stand up straight, letting the muscles in my back stretch.
Mission accomplished.
I hold up my bag of candy, much heavier than I ever expected it to be.
I think it's time to call it quits.
Mitch holds a finger up and winces a little.
One more house,
he says.
Please.
Beneath the moonlight, he looks different. Almost mysterious. And maybe cute. A small laugh escapes me.
One house, I say. Choose wisely.
He settles on a huge white house with a long driveway down at the end of the cul-de-sac. Mitch rings the doorbell, and after a few minutes, an exhausted woman in a witch hat and a sweatsuit answers the door.
Oh, darn, she says before Mitch even has a chance to say trick-or-treat. We ran out a little while ago.
Indiana Jones!
Cries a boy in a pirate costume a few feet behind her. It's a homemade costume, the kind pieced together with great attention to detail.
So cool!
Mitch beams. It's okay, I say to the lady. We're just out fooling around. We should head home. She wishes us a good night. We're halfway down the driveway before we hear the kid yell,
Hey! Hey! Wait up!
Pirate boy is sprinting toward us with a plastic pumpkin dangling from his fingers. He skids to a stop in front of us and holds out a piece of candy for each of us.
I like your costume,
he says to Mitch.
Thanks, little man. Your pirate costume is pretty cool.
Mitch doesn't talk to him like he's some little kid. Because to Mitch, he's not. To Mitch, everyone's somebody. The kid runs back inside to where his mom is waiting at the doorway. We sit on the curb with our candy at our feet. It's the first night this year that feels like fall might actually be on its way, and each breeze sinks into my southern bones.
I told you Halloween was awesome,
he says. I lie back on a patch of rich people grass. Real Texas grass is crunchy and brown, between the road and the sidewalk. It was okay.
When that kid saw me, he saw Indiana Jones, not some guy who botched play after playing last night's game, or some dude who plays video games all day. To him, I was someone else.
He lies down next to me. But doesn't it kind of feel like you're hiding from yourself? I turn to him. The grass tickles my cheek. I get not wanting to be yourself. But isn't it almost sadder to pretend otherwise?
I don't know. I think you gotta be who you wanna be until you feel like you are whoever it is you're trying to become. Sometimes half of doing something is pretending that you can.
He turns on his side and props himself up with his elbow.
Like that first time I talked to you, you terrified me. You kinda still do. But the more I act like you don't, the less you actually do.
He pauses.
Terrify me, I mean.
I get what he means. Because I think I've played pretend my whole life. I don't know when, but a really long time ago, I decided who I wanted to be. And I've been acting like her, whoever she is, since. But I think the act is fading. And I don't know if I like the person I am beneath it all. I wish there were some kind of magic words that could bridge the gap between the person I am and the one I wish I could be. Because the whole fake it till you make it thing, it's not working for me.
What?
He asks. I shake my head and clap my hands over my mouth, smiling against my fingertips. I terrify you? The thought of it makes me feel bad. But it's kind of nice, too.
to not feel like the one who's about to jump out of their skin all the time. Mitch pulls my hands down, away from my face. His palms are sweaty, and I'm realizing how close he is. I can see the pores in his nose.
I think the good stuff is always supposed to be a little bit scary, he says.
His lips brush mine. I stay very still as he curls his arm around my waist. We don't kiss with our tongues, just with our mouths open. I can feel the terror and exhilaration in his trembling touch. But I am not terrified. Not at all. And it's then that I know this moment is a lie. I know what I should be feeling, and it's not there.
Chapter 43. The next day is like someone has dropped an atomic bomb in our house. It starts when my mom gets home from church and decides to try her pageant dress on.
Dumplin', she calls from her bedroom. Baby, my zipper's stuck!
I trudge up the stairs. My mother has fit in her old pageant dress every year since she was crowned, including the year she gave birth to me. From the way Lucy told it, the house was a jazzercise funhouse, and it was a close call, but she did it. I've seen this dress, a seafoam green sequined bodice with a chiffon skirt, so many times that it's not even pretty anymore. Since the house is so old, there's no actual master bedroom upstairs, just a shared bathroom at the end of the hallway. It's weird to think that my mom's and Lucy's rooms are the same rooms they grew up in their whole lives. I imagine them as teenagers slamming doors in each other's faces or sneaking back and forth from room to room. I've heard so much about their lives together before me, but sometimes I wonder about what they chose not to tell me, and it's those blanks that I like to fill in. I walk down the hallway and reach for the glass knob and open the bedroom door. Oh, shit. From the doorway, I can tell that the zipper isn't the problem. There's a good 1-inch gap between the fabric across my mom's back. Sweat dampens her forehead as she waves me closer. I make a show of pulling on the zipper for a minute or two before saying, Mom, I don't think the zipper is the issue. She whirls around and looks over her shoulder so that she can catch her own reflection. God damn it, she spits. Okay, so my mom has maybe said the Lord's name in vain 2 times in her entire life, and only once that I can really remember.
Unzip me.
The zipper slides down like a sigh of relief. She sits on the edge of the bed, holding the front of the dress to her chest.
Okay, so I'm gonna have to go on a cleanse and add in some cycling and Pilates classes.
She says Pilates like Pilates, the twang in her voice becoming more and more pronounced with the added anxiety.
I think Mary Lou's got a class I can get into tomorrow night.
But I have to go to work, I say. I need the car. She looks up at me with her eyebrows raised, like, this is a crisis, and I do not understand the gravity of the situation.
Well, sweetheart, we're going to have to make it work. You keep taking the car to school, and I'll have it in the evenings. Most girls your age don't even have cars. We get what we get. We don't fret.
I don't bother fighting her on it. I sit in the break room picking on the apple my mom gave me when she dropped me off. I swear, when she pulled into the parking lot, she held her breath, like she might catch some extra calories if she inhaled too deeply near so much trans fat. I expected to hear from Mitch yesterday. A follow-up call of some sort to make sure we were cool after Halloween. Or maybe, like, a customer service call to rate my satisfaction. But nothing. I woke up yesterday morning and had to convince myself that he'd actually kissed me. It wasn't a bad kiss. There just wasn't that heart-stammering feeling I'd had with Beau. Today, though, he was his usual self, with no mention of the kiss. I started to think that maybe he really was someone else that night, and it was the magic of Halloween. But the guilt and regret I feel are all too real. Then, at the end of the day, when we walked to the parking lot, he took my hand firmly in his. It was hard not to feel like we hadn't skipped a step somewhere. I wasn't about to embark on another relationship that was all action and no definition. Before I left, he handed me a small hardback book called Magic for the Young and the Young at Heart.
I remember you saying you needed a talent for the pageant.
I shoved the book in my backpack and thanked him.
There's a note inside, he said, but read it later.
There's a knock on the break room door, even though it's open.
Hey,
says Beau. I smile involuntarily. Hi.
I wanted to make sure you got home okay the other night.
He fiddles with his fingers, and then shoves his hands in his back pockets.
I felt weird leaving you with that guy, but I recognized him from the dance.
He clears his throat.
You guys must be pretty close, huh?
My cheeks burn. Oh, right. Yeah, that was Mitch. He coughs into his elbow.
Cool.
A slight laugh slips from me. Cool. He turns on his heel and heads back to the kitchen. I release a slow breath through my pursed lips. I think that must have been the tamest interaction of all time, and I feel like I'm on fire. After we close up, the first thing I notice outside is the lack of my mom's car. I'm dialing her before the back doors even close.
Hello?
Her voice is thick with sleep.
Damn it.
Mom?
Oh, Dumplin'!
I can hear her grabbing her keys and slamming the sliding glass door.
On my way, baby.
The line goes dead. Marcus and Beau watch me.
You guys go on, I say.
Marcus nods his head toward where Tiffany's waiting for him in her car.
You want to bum a ride?
Thanks, but she's on her way. Marcus and Beau share a look.
I'll wait with you,
says Beau. Marcus nods a thanks to Beau and leaves. I can wait inside, I tell him. Ron'll be here for a while still.
It's cool.
He digs his keys out of his pocket.
Let's wait in my truck.
He must see the pause in my expression.
Just sitting,
he says.
I'll even put the armrest down.
Once we've settled, Beau is indeed true to his word and lowers the armrest between us. We sit in silence for a while, listening to the hum of the road at our backs. The scent of him hits me. All artificial cherry and aftershave. I guess I stopped noticing it over the summer, but it's been a while now since I've been in his truck. I don't quite understand how something can feel so comfortable and foreign at the same time, like deja vu. I reach forward and flip through some stations. Beau says nothing about me commandeering his radio.
I can't hear Dolly Parton anymore without thinking of you.
My stomach flips as I laugh nervously.
Well, lucky for you, she's not on the radio too much anymore.
My voice comes out more abrasively than I meant for it to. But really, I love that I've staked my claim on his memory. Except that I can't think of Dolly without seeing Elle or Lucy, and that doesn't seem fair.
Why, Dolly?
He asks.
I don't really get it. She's so fake.
Her boobs are, yeah, obviously.
I trace patterns on the armrest, looking for the right words. She's the kind of person who looks like she's never had a bad day. I guess she's sort of my guru. Like, her music is good, I guess. But it's her that makes it good. With her big hair and fake boobs, I've never seen anyone who's living the life they set out to live like she does. He studies me, but doesn't say anything. It's like every day is Halloween for her. Mitch in his costume flickers in my memory. But for Dolly, it's not dress-up or make-believe. It's her life. And it's exactly how she chose for it to be. I stop myself before I get too cheesy.
Huh.
He crosses his arms and sinks down further into his seat.
I've always thought of her as some kind of cartoon character. But maybe not.
The harpy's light above us cuts out, and we let the radio do the talking.
No car?
He asks after a while.
What's the story there?
I lean my head against the headrest.
It wouldn't start. About 2 months ago, maybe?
Is that all? It feels like it's been forever since everything happened and I entered the pageant. And since I lost Ellen. It's been in the shop ever since. Can't afford to get it fixed.
I feel ya,
he says.
Money's supposed to make things easier, but it's always doing the opposite. I sort of wish we worked on a barter system.
His words grate on me. Beau's gone to private school for the last few years, and that's anything but free.
What?
He asks. I shake my head.
No. Come on. Out with it.
After a long moment, I say, well, I mean, you went to Holy Cross. I get that you're trying to be nice, but I don't think it's fair to say you actually know what it feels like to be broke.
Wow,
he says.
That's a pretty broad assumption.
Headlights fled the cab of the truck from behind us. Whatever, I say. You asked. Good night. Tell Becca I said hi. I slide out of his truck and slam the door behind me. He rolls down the window.
Just so you know,
he calls to me,
not everyone who goes to private school is rich, especially not the poor kids who can play basketball.
The window rolls back up, dividing him from me before I have a chance to add anything else. My cheeks burn with embarrassment, but more than anything, I'm confused. Why wouldn't he tell me about being on scholarship? My mom gets out of her car and runs up to Beau's window. I watch from the other side of the truck as she uses one knuckle to knock on the glass. She talks in the high-pitched voice she only uses when communicating with menfolk. Beau says something, and her whole face lights up. She touches his forearm and holds her other hand to her chest.
Bless your heart, Beau,
I hear her say. She walks to the car, and I follow. Mom? We get in the car, and she says,
I'm so sorry, Will. That P-Lates kicked my behind, and I was out like a light the second I got home.
It's fine, I grumble as she's turning out onto the street. But what was that about?
Your sweet co-worker, Beau. He said his name was?
She laughs, and out of the corner of her mouth says,
that boy's jawline could cut glass.
Mom?
I said we were shuffling around, sharing a car, and I appreciated him waiting on me.
She turns, but not hard enough for her blinker to stop ticking.
But then he said y'all worked the same schedule and he could drive you home every night. Mom! You said no, right?
Panic rips through me. Click, click, click. The blinkers are still going.
Well, why would I do that? He was so kind to offer. Don't let me stand in the way of a good deed.
I sigh. A huge, dramatic sigh.
Willow Dean, she says. Enough with that sighing. Count your blessings.
She pulls into our driveway.
Especially the good-looking ones.
I hate you, I say as I climb out of the car.
Well, aren't you a wretched thing?
She calls after me.
And maybe do your hair before your next shift. A well-styled head of hair is a head above the rest.
Chapter 44. The bell for world history rings, and I barely make it through the door before Miss Rubio shuts it behind me. I stop. Right there, in Amanda's usual seat next to mine, is Beau. I think my brain is dribbling out my ears. From the back of the room, she shrugs and mouths, Peach Butt wouldn't move. I wave my hand at the air to tell her it's fine. But really, it's not, because what the hell is even happening? Seating for world history isn't assigned. But no one has budged since the first day, so it goes without being said. Knowing Amanda, there was a confrontation when she saw him in her seat, but someone had to lose, and it wasn't Beau. He sort of half smiles when I sit down and says,
Willow Dean.
And that's it. That is the only word he says for the whole damn period. When the bell rings, I scramble out the door as fast as I can. I meet Mitch in the parking lot, and his face brightens because he thinks the stupid grin on my face is for him. No, I want to tell him. Don't give me that sweet smile. I don't deserve it. The next day, Beau's there again in Amanda's seat. I watch from the corner of my vision as he brushes his knuckles across his chin. I want to touch him. It seems inevitable. He's a negative, and I'm a positive, and all that stands between us is a matter of time. Like yesterday, he says my name at the beginning of class, but this time adds,
I'll see you tonight.
There is a chorus of bees in my stomach as I listen to Beau whistling in the kitchen. Beau always whistles when he thinks no one is listening. But normally it's no song in particular, just a hodgepodge of tunes. But tonight his lips press together and whistle Jolene by Dolly Parton, which turns my knees to mush. Ron comes out from his office and hums along as he